afternoon. You are joining Tardy We the People Radio.
Not my fault.
It's kind of your fault.
No.
You showed up with me.
Hey, we can start right out with the blame game.
Blame.
We can talk about what that really means.
And then we have a counselor here who can help us sort out the blame game. This is awesome.
That's right.
He's all sitting over there.
Okay, so I'm not my fault. You can be somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. So we decided since the world was sort of out of control. It's interesting. I was chatting with someone yesterday who needed a good counselor, and I said to myself, self, I know a guy.
I know a guy.
And so anyway, it seemed like such a good time for a program about, let's see, what did I call it? Finding balance in a chaotic world. Sounded better than, are you losing your mind?
That is a tall order.
Are you losing your mind was really a lot closer to the truth than I think you wanted to go. That's a lot of pressure. So our guest today is Guy Asherman. And he typically is our January 1st. Actually, this last year you were January 3rd. You ring in the new year with us.
I see.
But this year is so bad.
Couldn't wait.
We've got to do it twice. We just de-headphoned him.
We're celebrating 2017 a little early.
Yeah, we are. We're just gonna go there.
We
now.
Needed it.
Oh my gosh! So you can find all sorts of information on our website, WeThePeopleRadio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan,
and I'm Bill Cundiff,
and I'm Bob Martin,
and I'm Guy Asherman.
There you go.
There you are. Last time I checked,
I just realized we didn't do that part. Sorry, I was having a little trouble breathing this morning. So then you use the inhaler and.
My hands weren't on your throat either.
Yeah, and your heart feels like it's going 500 miles an hour, so I'm talking a little faster than usual.
Technical update.
Oh, yeah.
About the unpleasantness. Our chat room went, and our online stream went down, I don't know, it's probably been down for at least an hour or longer.
Fabulous.
And our webmaster tells me the problem is not on our end, it's on the, it's wherever the server is, and they are attempting to rectify the problem. In the meantime, we keep trying to get our stream back online, but no luck so far. So if you're hearing us, you're hearing us over AM 1460 right now.
And if you have people that are typically listening online and are emailing, I should check my email, I suppose. And oddly enough, as far as we know, it has nothing to do with the domain naming system being handed over to a...
Oh, you know what?
I know. I'm like...
There you are right there.
Day one. Bam.
It's the Chinese...
Anyway, see, just
one,
a little
one
more.
One day, we relinquish control of it, and the online stream goes to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, somehow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
did you feel more secure when the U.S. was managing it?
See, that's the funny part.
Really?
We're not
happy with government, but don't take any of the controls away.
It's funny because I'll have people call at the office. I heard this on the news, or I saw this on TV or whatever, and I'm like, do you typically think that the media tells you the truth? Well, no, but you know what is going on.
Only when it fits the need.
Yep.
They can't both be true at the same time. So, okay. Straighten out the, you were the pastor at Reading Christian Fellowship, or you still are?
No, I was.
You were. You're a was now. Okay.
I'm a has-been.
Okay.
Join the ranks.
I wasn't sure. I, put the bio up there. I stole the one off your website because you're counseling.
Yes.
Do we call it a business or a service or a?
It's a nonprofit counseling center.
Center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's called Higher Ground.
Yes, it is.
And an easy time finding you.
Yes, and we're on the fourth floor, so that fits the metaphor, Higher Ground.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And you have other counselors in that building.
Yes,
that,
we do.
That building's become kind of popular again. I'm not sure why everyone's at, 2400 Washington
mm-hmm.
Avenue?
Yeah. Well, there's two buildings there, and the whole left side of it, or the south side of it, is Northern Valley Catholic Social Services, and that, of course, is a huge social service that ministers to our community as well as doing a lot of counseling.
Sure.
And I sometimes teach people and I tell them we're in the North Protestant wing.
You're in the orange wing? You guys had to just repaint it. The orange wing and the green wing.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, we're on the fourth floor, 2400, suite 401. We've been there for 6 months and we have had the privilege of coming alongside many people and many more are coming our way. And it's a great joy to be able to serve those who are hurting.
You have four people there? I forget now. I looked on your website. Yes. Four or five?
Well, we have three doing counseling, and then we have a couple of others doing some assistance for us or consulting for us. Mainly, there are three of us there each week.
That's cool. Yeah. So for the people who miss our program on New Year's, which is when they typically hear you, give folks some background on you. You have an interesting story.
Give me a hint. What is my story?
Well, you know, kind of how you wound up where you wound up.
Yeah.
You've been, you've been with your wife since you guys were in the eighth grade. That's a notable
Still love
achievement.
Each other. It is. It's 43 years now we've been together. We have three grown adult sons, and of course they are married and have children. We have 10 grandchildren, and I'm way too young to have 10 grandchildren.
Yeah, you kind of are.
Yes. And so, I have been in ministry off and on through the years. I have been involved in finance and agriculture for a few years in between those. I come from an agricultural background, as does my wife. And we moved to Reading 20 years ago and have been involved with ministry and counseling during our time here, though there was also a brief stint when we first came down here being involved with retail banking. So I am a jerk of all trades, master of none. But, you know, life experience counts for something when you get to be this age. It doesn't feel good when you're actually going through it. But in hindsight, it looks like I've got something to contribute to just about everybody.
Yeah, you look back and you go, actually, I've kind of been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, going through it, there was a lot of anxiety and depression, which is why I'm in this field today.
You're like, I'm here to show you that you can get through it.
Yes.
Well, there seems, I mean, maybe it's just the line of work I'm in, but it seems that people are,
melting down.
Yeah, or boiling over, or both.
Yes.
I mean, there's some that truly do go through the melting down. But I had, I think it might have been four, but I'll be conservative and I'll say three. I had three people Friday call me at the office and tell me that this is it. Mm-hmm. This is it. You know, I mean, we're just one click from being sucked off the planet, and it's mm-hmm. the end of the whole thing. And
right. Well, and we've been saying that for 2,000 years now.
And I kind of mentioned that. I said, you know, there have been a lot of different times, you know. I mean, you haven't been asked to jump in a bunk bed in a white outfit, have you, or anything?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know if joking is good, but it's all I've got.
And I don't know if I should talk theology today or not. That's not what you
can
asked me to
no,
be
no,
here.
You can talk about whatever you want.
But as we know, God has given every generation the hope that the Lord could return in their lifetime. I think that's by design, if I could speak for God, which
no,
I cannot
I think that's
do,
a good but, idea.
And so, you know, when people have that hope, It's for many of us, that is what keeps us going, because if we don't have that hope, all we have is despair. And and despair, of course, is the definition of depression. It's the absence of hope. It's darkness. And if we don't have a spiritual hope of some kind, a meaning and a purpose for our life, then we are drawn into darkness and oftentimes cannot find our way out. Additionally, I would say that many Christians are struggling with depression and anxiety as well. So this is – I'm not
– No, it's a pretty wide – I mean, these weren't people that are fly off the handle. These are these are good,
they're
solid
just like you
folks.
And I.
That
yeah, people you'd never expect to hear stuff like that from.
It's probably not the best counseling strategy, but I always remind them of the plague. Because that always
could
cheers me up.
Yeah.
I'm like, think of how the plague must have looked.
Things could always be worse strategy.
Yeah, but I do. I think about the plague, I guess, because I was an English major and I read a lot of stuff from that era. And I think, how scary would that have been? Besides the fact everyone was dying, no one could read.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? The whole world is literally in the dark ages. They called it that for a reason.
Yes, they did. But, you know, in terms of dark and middle ages, through many, many difficulties, I'm not trying to minimize it whatsoever. We are blessed of God that we live where we live in the days that we live in modern medicine. But the people who went through those issues, they also had a hope that was eternally focused.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a life, their lifespan was, 45 years or something mm-hmm. like that anyway. And so, you know, I think that folks were able to cope. I guess that puts all of us on borrowed time, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, here on the back side of the of the travel. So I guess we better take a break since we've been tardy and then goofing off. there'll be more goofing off. We won't be tardy anymore, though.
I can't imagine that.
We're here in the chairs, so no more tardiness. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Crickets.
Accidental.
I got a feeling we're going to have some country music today.
Well, now that we've got that all squared away.
Yeah. Since we're all on borrowed time.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, but there's something to be said for that. You know, the 20-somethings don't have a real clear-eyed view of where we're headed because they don't know where they've been. Mm-hmm. They haven't been very far. So we're here chatting with Guy Asherman from Higher Ground Counseling Center here in Reading. Do you guys do stuff online? Do you communicate with people that way, or is it a...
No, we don't. Some therapists do.
Yeah, I wondered.
But, you know, so much of the healing process is found in having a relationship with people.
Like,
you know,
real humans.
Yeah.
That we don't do anymore. I mean, you don't have texting counseling?
No, we don't. Thank
Probably
goodness.
Should.
Yeah, right. So, you know, so many people today don't have good, solid relationships with healthy people. And so, you know, much of what we do is to be that for them. Somebody who's safe, somebody who's confidential. Somebody who has empathy and understands what they're going through. Maybe some of us have gone through it as well. And so you just can't do that with typed words or even through a Skype or something. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it helps people. I'm not saying.
Although you do have a mean blog.
Well,
mean in the modern sense.
Yeah, right.
You have a lot of good information on there.
Yeah.
I would encourage people to go. Your site is... HGCounseling.com.
Oh,
yeah, that's it.
And I think somewhere on there you'll find a window, a drop down that takes you to the blog. There's actually two different blogs. You'll find one with some other sort quotes.
Yeah, if you just go to our staff, that's how I found it. I went to our staff, okay. And then it said, check my blog. It's all on our site, but HGCounseling.com.
I'm quite pleased that you understand my webpage.
I did. I went and it was pretty. it was pretty basic.
Okay,
it's good though.
One of the things we were talking about at the break was, I think one of the big reasons people are melting down is we are in the information age, and people are just today being bombarded with so much information.
Yeah, we're in the bad information age.
Well, yeah, and they're kind of left at their own devices to determine what's real and what isn't real, and it just comes at them from every angle. And that it's 24/7, you know, what do we do?
Well, I think it creates a hypervigilance, in all honesty. It's not healthy. It's not good for us. We as a people have lost the art of being still, of meditation, of quietness, of a walk in the forest. And if we do go on the walk in the forest, we still have our cell phone, and we're still on it. We're still texting. We're still looking at emails. And I think one of the healthiest things that people can do for themselves is to get away from this on a fairly regular basis. You have to, in fact, since I'm a family counselor, the texts and all the information and the phones and the laptops and all of that, it's destroying marriages. It's destroying families. Because you sit down at the dinner table, there's four people, two parents, two kids, and they're not even looking at each other. They're all doing their thing. And it's taken its toll. It really is.
But, yeah, I remember when we were kids, we'd sit down for dinner. We ate as a family, everybody. And that, I think our generation did that. I don't think many people do that anymore.
So
but
since we've established we're old.
But one of the things was is when we sat down for dinner, there was no TV. That thing was off. It was just us.
How about if the phone rang?
Yeah.
That was like the height of rudeness.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Who you answered would be calling right now? It's dinner time.
Yeah. How dare they?
How dare they? And now it's like, we ate dinner at 9 o'clock, so okay. Just don't ever call us.
Yeah, but I think today, you know, the TV goes on when you get up in the morning, and I don't think it goes off until you go to bed.
Yeah.
And it's just noise.
It was interesting because we went to Mass last night, and Father George was funny. He said, you know, that he was talking about the news. It was really weird. It was like everybody was reading everyone's mind this week. You know, it was kind of all the same message. And he said, when I was a little kid, I used to watch the news, and I'd get all scared. You know, that there'd be these disasters and floods and, you know, things like that. And he said, my mom always told me, don't watch that part. Watch for the people that are helping. Mm. And I thought, what a great.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
what
look
a,
for,
like,
look
what
for
a,
the helpers. That's what
a great
he was talking
mom,
about.
You know, sure. What a great mom thing to tell your kid, you know, don't watch the high water or the smashed house or whatever the thing is. You know, look for the people that are helping.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's kind of cool. So what do you tell them? Just turn the thing off?
I do.
Yeah.
You know, and all, especially during political season that we're in right now, everybody is hanging on every word, but they're not changing their mind. I'm serious.
It's funny. I thought about that the
other
day, too.
Do you think they're becoming more confused, though? I mean, they got so much, you know, they're questioning their own ability to make a decision when they get so much information. They don't know if they're doing the right thing.
I think maybe the 10 or 20% in the middle may be undecided, you know. But
everybody picked their team kind of a while ago, I think.
Yeah, well, we've picked our party, you know.
Right.
And
yeah.
So it's to some extent, it's like, I've been a faithful this for so many years. I'm voting this way. I don't care what the facts are. This is just what I'm going to do. So we're creatures of habit in that regard. Plus, we love to be on the winning side. And, you know,
that's true. I didn't really think about that. Do people change their mind thinking they don't want to be part of the losing team?
I think some do, yes. It's the same thing as football. I was actually, I'll probably get into trouble for saying this, because I am a 49er fan, have been for years and years. But this year, I'm not sure I'm.
Until What's-His-Face showed up, and now we're.
And he won't kneel when we do the national anthem. By the way, the opening day of football dropped 11 points in ratings. Because of those events of people refusing to stand for the national anthem. I think so, too.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you
starve them out.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was going somewhere. Oh, I was watching before I came here today. I was watching a little bit of the Oakland Raider game, and I have been a diehard, hate Oakland Raider fan for a long time, and I'm beginning to wonder if I am not softening a little bit. So, Jerry Wheeler, if you're listening, you're welcome.
Did they all stand up and properly respect the flag?
I don't know. I don't really watch a lot of it anymore. Professional sports on the
level watch any.
Has just turned me off really bad. So it's
yeah,
not,
I gave
it's
up
not
on
about,
a long time ago.
It's not about sportsmanship anymore. And no. So it's a real turnoff for me.
I do have a nephew who's the youngest Skybox owner at the Staples Center.
Oh, is that
He's
right?
like 24.
Wow.
Manages two boxes down there. And so, you know, you should watch it if it's at the Staples Center, but other places, forget it.
Yeah. When people start talking sports with me, if it's football, I'll ask them what inning they did it in. And if it's football, I'll ask them how they hit the ball. Or, you know.
Well, you know, speaking of anxiety, I mean, look how people watch their football games.
Oh, yeah.
People get so upset over what team
wins
or what team doesn't because they have no identity in themselves.
Right.
Because the mom and pop shops are all gone, because all of us have a job for somebody that pays a check that we don't even see. It comes from another part of the country. We're working for corporations. That we don't have that sense of hope and desire to make good for ourselves.
Or that we're ever going to get a chance to drive the bus.
Yeah, exactly.
we're never going to get to the steering wheel. So,
and if we do move up in the ladder in some kind of an organization, there's still somebody above us. And it all runs downhill. No matter how hard we are on the ladder, it's going to hit us eventually. But, you know, when my folks grew up, they had their own grocery stores. And when people came back from the war, they had a laundromat and a grocery store and a gas station. And people made it because it was fulfilling because they owned it.
Well, you shopped places because you were supporting them.
And you knew them. You knew their family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
you didn't dare, you didn't dare whatever the thing was, buy something someplace else because, well, it's funny, we had that recently. because we know the people that run the store, and it's like, you know what, they're going to know if we take a renewal class someplace else, so even if it's less money, it's still wrong.
Yeah.
But that's throwback from when we were kids.
Right, exactly. So, people had hope, they had ambition, they were vested, they cared, and if their business made it, and an awful lot of them did back in those days, mm-hmm. they were winners. Nowadays, who's the winner? And I think it's taking a tremendous toll on our psyche, to be very, very honest. So mm-hmm. if I can't be a winner in something that I'm doing, I better pick a winning team, and all of my energy is vested in them. And if they do okay, I'm okay. You'd be surprised how many people will actually go into a depression when their team loses. Honest truth.
I believe you, but it's so incomprehensible. Yeah. But I do believe, yeah. I mean, I could see that. And, well, same too. I mean, how many people have you heard say that, in the November election, depending on which way they think it's going to go, that the country's gone. That's
right.
It.
They're, well, we've been saying that for so
I know.
Many years. We're at a crossroads. We've been saying that for 50 years or probably longer. Probably Hamilton said that, But you're right. In fact, the last election that we had 4 years ago is when I turned my news off, just to be very honest with you, because it had an impact on me.
Oh, and it did me too. Yeah. I was so shocked at the outcome because I so much believed it was going to go the other way. Everybody was saying it was going to go the and then it.
Well, it went the other way till like 5 minutes of eight, and then between
like,
the time I left
this
happened? Studio and walked outside and got in my truck, somehow it all changed that night. I'll never forget that. It took me to walk down the block.
Wow.
That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, I walked out and it was like, yeah, everything's where I thought it was. I got in the truck. I turned on the radio. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It almost made me want to come back in. It's like, well, have I time traveled? Did something, what happened?
And if it
But it
had,
took weeks for people. Well, yeah, months actually for people to kind of pull out of that.
But we've been doing this a long time. We've been doing elections for a long time. Sometimes Republicans win, sometimes Democrats win. But it doesn't ever appear that the direction ever changes. Sometimes it slows down a little bit, but it's still going in the same direction.
But doesn't it look like it's really more impactful this time with people? So many more people are talking about it. Everywhere you go, it seems like people are talking about politics or the country or where we're headed, or it just seems like that's the upfront conversation with everybody now.
Well, it's use the word that belongs in this is it's super polarized. I mean,
it's a reflection of our nation.
Exactly.
We're becoming more and more and more polarized.
Yep.
We have the old school thought versus the new school, and the progressives have kind of taken the lead. And it's so very, very contrary to folks our age as to what we grew up with that a lot of people don't really understand what has happened.
And you're not allowed to ask questions because if you do, you're a hater.
Exactly.
And
you're a bigot or something.
You're a whatever. And I think that's been really disconcerting for people too. So they go either too far the other way and then they're just abrasive or – They're just hiding.
But then it trickles down, too. I mean, it's like when you find out how somebody feels about political issues or where they stand on issues, all of a sudden you're taking a different mindset about them and who they know and, what they do. And your
allocation of time in their direction.
Snowballs,
But here's the irony. Whether they're on the left or whether they're on the right, we all get up in the morning, we all put our pants and our shoes on, we get in a car and we go to a job. At least most of us do.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this set of – it's the rhetoric that divides us more than how we actually live our lives.
Mm.
And so I think that we all just need to calm down.
Yeah, everybody needs
to really
take a breath.
I think that I would like to say to the listeners right now, if your candidate does not win, My number is 941-9003, exactly. Higher Ground Counseling. You can find us on hgcounseling.com. We're here. We're here for you.
We're going to walk you through this.
It's true, too. Yeah, don't call me. Yeah. Call Guy.
People really,
I'm going to put you on our voicemail.
People really believe, like, this is the end. I mean, this is the end. We're at the end of the road now.
We have to take a break so we can contemplate the end.
Okay.
And harken back to the plague, because it was much worse then. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Better take the fall. Kick them in the head while they're down there.
The winner takes it all.
That's right.
It's kind of a Coliseum sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on right now. So we have Guy Asherman with us this afternoon. It was 60 degrees today when
we got up.
You know, and it was Friday. Been a long week. And I thought, you know what? We need to get out of here. We should just go over to the coast and just have some nice fog and... I thought, wow, it's a good thing we didn't waste the money and go over there. We just stayed home, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Came to us.
We were laughing this morning. We're like, can you imagine if we came back today and it was the same weather as over there? Yeah. We'd be like, what the heck? Because they always tell us how we're going to get rain. We're like, right, rain. Mm-hmm. Anyway, nice.
Yes.
I'm kind of hoping with a little break from the 200-degree summer, maybe, you know. Does that help people?
It does help people, very much so.
It helps me.
I don't know what we would do as a people if we didn't have four seasons or something resembling four seasons.
That really does change your whole mindset, doesn't it?
Yes, but in the middle of winter, however, it does get to be old. So it never gets old for me.
I just want you to know I'm like winter cheerful.
Well, it's not so much the temperature, it is the length of day.
Right.
And the length of day does impact people's mental health.
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day. We were walking along, and it was blazing hot, and walking the dogs, and we were thinking, you know, those people who live in Alaska and it stays dark, you know, they probably have a lot of mental health issues.
They do. It's a fact, yes.
Right.
Yeah, short days.
Yeah.
Just can't do it, huh?
Some days the sun doesn't even come up, you know.
Right.
And then the flip side, I know one trip I took up there, it never got dark.
Yes.
It never got dark. Right. And so 3 o'clock in the morning, you had to really – say, all right, I got to go to bed. And you close all the blinds and you try to make it dark and sleep for about 2 hours and get up and you're ready to go again.
Yeah. But
that would work on you.
This political season is kind of like the Alaska length of day, length of night kind of thing.
just goes on and on.
It kind of dawns on me. We've been in the dark for quite some time. And,
you know, this whole final stretch we're in right now on this election, I think people are just at the peak of what they can take. You know,
I had a grown
woman. They can't
woman.
Wait for the outcome. You know?
I don't know why it would have been better if she was a grown man. But for me, it would have. I don't know why. It's still bad. But I had a grown woman. I could tell by her voice. She was not a kid. I mean, this was a grown woman who called our office, screamed bastards into the phone like as loud as she possibly could. I know. And slammed the phone down. That
was the
mess.
Made her feel better. She was better after that.
And I thought, you took the time to look up the number and do that. And then, of course, you know, my response to everything, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. I've got two parents. Stephanie's got two parents. Brenda's got two parents.
Who the heck was she talking about?
She had a wrong number. It's totally a wrong number. But...
Well, you know,
we
have this misnomer that escalating anger resolves anger, and it doesn't.
Who thinks that's a good idea?
You know, people say, well, you know, if you just go scream in a pillow, you'll feel better.
Oh, that's true.
Who
I have heard that.
Who has tried it, and it actually made them feel better?
Yeah, that resolves the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's definitely an issue that needs to be talked about.
And by the way, many folks believe this and teach this, and I think that it's true. I don't know if it's true in every case, but it's true probably in a majority of them, that the definition of depression is it is the highest form of anger. That we become so frustrated.
Oh, if you go so far one way, you just
shut off. That way.
You shut down. You're so mad, you just shut down. And if we allow our anger to get that bad, and then sometimes we then turn it inward. So if I have not performed up to my own personal expectations, I become angry at myself, and then we can go into depression. Depression is actually a reflection of my past. And when we are consumed with sentences, our self-talk that begin with, I should have, if only, that means that we are living in the past and we are troubled with regrets, guilt, shame about our past. So a lot of times our past is impacted, our depression is impacted by our past. If, however, our self-talk begins with this phrase, what if, then we're looking into the future. So we're kind of, and by the way, depression and anxiety, you know, most frequently go at the same time. They exist together. So we lose our mental health because I'm living in the past and I'm worried about the future and I have deprived myself and everybody around me of living in the moment today because we're never fully present. And I would just
because you're always looking either backwards or forwards.
Yes.
Too far.
And I would like to really send a caution out to parents because they're so wrapped up in all of this. The kids don't even know they're in the house. The kids need parents to be fully present. My focus is on you, and I don't mean holding your cell phone and then looking at them occasionally like somehow you're making any kind of an impact on your child's life. You need to attach to your children, and it's done by living in the present and being available for them whenever they need it. And when a child comes up to you and has a question or wants to talk to you, shut everything off. Turn off the TV, turn it all off, and listen, and lots of eye contact, lots of touch. Put them on your lap if they're small enough, or if they're too big, get on theirs. You know. But, you know, kids need this, and they're not getting it today.
It's interesting because...
That's interesting.
It would have been a great video, like for your website. Really, we were waiting for Chinese. We stopped by to get takeout Chinese. Now that's like the fastest thing, right? Mm-hmm. Next to going and dropping off a letter at the post office. Mm-hmm. I mean, takeout Chinese. What is that? It's like minutes, right?
Right.
It was an hour.
It was an hour.
We were losing our minds by the. It was like, you know, you get to that point where all of a sudden you just can't do it anymore, and you just kind of anyway. We got there. But I was watching this family, mom, dad, girl, boy. Little boy sitting next to his dad, little girl sitting next to the mom. And the dad's on his phone, the mom's on her phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the little girl kind of amused herself for a while. And little boy was like, you know, he was what, eight?
I'd say probably eight.
Maybe seven or eight. He was a little kid. And he was kind of swinging his feet. And then he was kind of dancing around, you know how they do.
Sure.
And he was like, hey, dad, you know, hey, dad. Mm-hmm. And the dad... just wouldn't, you know,
engage.
Wouldn't engage. And so this kid started getting worse and worse and worse and worse until pretty soon he was jumping out of his chair and running around. And then he was in all sorts of trouble and the dad blows his cool. And I thought.
Negative attention is better than no attention for a child.
And that's exactly what was going on.
That's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
But that happens all the time. I think that happens at work.
Yeah.
you know, if you don't take care of the people that are doing a good job, you know, pretty soon they're not doing a good job anymore.
Let me share with your listeners just how important it is for parents to be attached to their children. Number one, if you wait until they're teenagers and they're acting out and you try to attach, you've blown your opportunity.
Yeah, it's too
late. Not saying it's 100% blown, but a lot of times you can try to recover. Maybe it helps. But
that'd be hard.
Attachment between a child, even from being an infant with their parent, is where conscience is born. And let me explain a little bit. I sometimes share this illustration with many folks in counseling that, you know, a baby comes home from the hospital, it's a newborn, and they have these giant godlike people taking care of them, changing their diaper, feeding them, loving, making goofy faces at them, making funny noises. And then as soon as the child's vision gets good enough to be able to see clearly, they know instinctively to look at your eyes, and that's when they smile. And the attachment is beginning to take place. Then, so everything is good. These people must be God. I mean, wow, look, they love me. They rock me. They take care of me. Then when the child begins to crawl, and they crawl to the wall where the wall plug is, and the parent says to the child, "Johnny, no." And you can picture this in your mind if you have been around children. Johnny kind of sits back on his diaper, looks up at this parent with a puzzled look, because number one, the child's never heard that expression or that tone before. And number two, the child has never heard the word no before. And so they're processing. And if you look at him, you can see the gears turning.
Right.
So the parent goes into the other room for just a couple minutes. What does Johnny do? Johnny reaches for the wall plug. Parent is kind of watching out of the corner of their eye. Parent walks in and does a very little tap on the hand and said, "Johnny, I said no." Johnny sits back on his diaper, looks up, and about 3 seconds later, he then cries. And the psychologists tell us that that moment is when conscience is born, because this precious little being has for the first time experienced the fact that they have the ability to disappoint people they love. Now, if the child is not attached to the parent and they slap them, they just get angry.
They didn't disappoint anybody.
You know what? Just get out of my life. I'm not attached to you. It doesn't care. And then I have that tendency to grow up with a very weak conscience. So, you know, if we want our children, when they're teens, to make healthy choices, they will make those choices if they understand, I am so attached to my parents, I don't want to disappoint them. Because if you think you're going to make their choices for them, you're wrong. You've been teaching them all of these years. The reason teenagers can do well today is they understand there is a right and a wrong, and I don't want to disappoint my parents. They're not going to be perfect. Obviously, they're not going to be perfect. But if there's a conscience there, they'll come back. They'll feel the guilt, and then they'll come back.
Right.
So attachment.
And that used to be a big thing. I mean, that was a big thing when we were kids. There were a lot of things you didn't do because it just wasn't done.
Right.
You know, it wasn't done. Your coach would know. Your parents would know. I mean, you had a lot of people to disappoint.
You were raised by a village.
Yeah, you had a lot of people to disappoint, you know.
Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to cross the line, you would chew gum in class. You know, that was...
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, your crazy moments were pretty,
you know,
pretty
when
limited.
When you talk about attachment, it reminded me there's a family that goes to the same church we go to, and they have two boys. And they typically always sit a couple rows ahead of us. And... every time when they're all there as a family, they're up old enough now where I think a couple of them are, or
these,
one,
both,
one of them's
both
in
the
college.
Boys are in college. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when they're there as a family, invariably during that mass, the father and the son or both sons will stand up, and at some point they put their arms around each other's shoulders. Yeah. And just, you look at that and you think, how often do you see that? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, typically, you know, a dad or a mom would try to put their arm around the kid, and the kid kind of crawls away, you know,
right.
Don't touch me, you know.
This is
embarrassing.
Yeah.
But these guys, they're just one.
These guys are huggers.
They're huggers.
It's fun to watch.
And it's not always instigated by the parent. A lot of times the son will just put the arm around the mom or the dad, and they all stand there. And it's like, it just puts a smile on your face when you see that, because most times with teenagers, it's the exact opposite.
Right. Yeah,
they don't have
they want
that
to sit in the other pew.
Yeah, or they don't even want to go.
Right.
You know, they don't want to be seen with their parents.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a difference in the way they were raised to have that bond.
Yeah.
They're a tight unit. It's funny when you see the parents there together. Mm-hmm. They're like missing a wheel. We've got to take one more really quick break here before the top of the hour, and then we're going to come back all next hour. We're talking about this. So hope you're enjoying it. You're stuck with us. The only break you get is the music. Thanks, Bob. Jethro Tull on a Sunday?
Yes.
Well, we're talking about counseling.
Good one, Bob.
Actually, we lost our mental health about his era. I mean, he's part of the reason.
Exactly.
We're stuck in all the music of back when things kind of worked a little bit. But we did some pretty weird music. We used it a lot, and it all meant things we didn't understand back then. We were seriously being programmed with stuff that we obviously were too dopey to get.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
I listen to an oldie once in a while now, and I catch the words, like maybe for the first time, and I said, seriously?
Yeah, we did that the other day. It's like,
yeah,
wow.
You're like singing along. You're like,
yeah, I can't sing.
Come
that.
Out of
yeah.
my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird, huh? Okay, so you had a thought right before we
had
to unceremoniously take a break there.
Well, I have sometimes said, I have met in my entire lifetime two or three families that actually were the Ozzie and Harriet type scenario. There's not very many of them.
No, there's not.
And there weren't actually when Ozzie and Harriet were there. I mean, obviously more functional, more nuclear than it is today. But I'm sure that there are some listeners today who have said, you know what, guy, you're making me feel worse or not making me feel better. You're telling me that the reason my kids didn't turn out is because I didn't attach them. And I did attach them. I loved them. I cared for them. And they still grew up and broke my heart. And I want to say to those folks, by the way, an awful large percentage of my practice is helping parents with their adult children because they just don't know what to do with them. Or they're raising their grandchildren even.
It's a lot of that.
So, I just want to have a lot of grace for people right now who are saying, Guy, I was as good a parent as you. Probably you were better than I was. Your kids still grew up and broke your heart, and you are depressed. You are living in agony. The golden years have been anything but golden years, and it has made life almost unbearable for you. And there's a way to work through that. It's about trying to draw boundaries and let your kids be responsible for themselves. If they're 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, they still have to learn how to be responsible for themselves. So to those of you who are struggling through those issues, all the grace in the world coming your way, I know that that hurts tremendously.
Yeah. And
you kind of forget about those folks because, I think we all know people that have kids that you hadn't seen them for a while. Hey, how's the family? Oh, my kid's on heroin. That happened to us here a while back.
Yeah.
The kids were just little kids last time we saw them.
Yeah.
And they were sweet little kids. Everybody got along.
Right.
And we find out their daughter
she
is
says,
living
oh,
on the street.
Yeah, oh, you've seen her. She's sitting on the corner.
Oh, my.
And they've, gone through the rehab thing and done all that and still nowhere. Spoke with a woman Friday who's raising three grandkids.
Yeah.
Great grandkids.
Yeah.
Wowza. Not what she had in mind. Very nice lady. Obviously not her fault.
Right.
But there's a lot of that. And it's nice that you focus there.
Sure.
It's a good place for people.
We're here for people who have struggled, not those who got it all right. They don't call me.
Give them your phone number one more time.
941-9003.
There you go. Right there in Washington
Plaza.
Plaza, right
there
off
of Park Marina.
All righty. We'll be back with Guy Asherman. You're listening to We the People Radio. Welcome back. You're joining We the People Radio. And, just in case you don't know where that music comes from, it's Redneck Friend, which we thought was funny back in, good Lord, 2010? 2000? When did we start doing this? This was a really long time ago.
2011.
Is that it?
No, you did start in 2010.
Oh, yeah, you started in 2011.
I started in 2011.
Yeah, kind of weird. You know, we picked that little song. We thought, oh, that's kind of a fun little song. And here we are all these years later. You got to watch what you do. It's like when you first get married, you've got to watch who takes out the garbage first.
Well, you know, I come from the country, and so watch what you say.
So we're treading on your higher ground are we?
And that was Jackson Browne.
Yeah, Jackson Browne.
Have you guys heard the song Redneck? Redneck?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites.
I love that song.
I resemble that song.
Cheetah back of spit.
Yep.
Maybe we'll have to change our song. Okay, so we're here with Guy Asherman, for those of you joining this second hour. Missed the first part, and I don't know, there's something goofy going on with our online thing and all that stuff.
But we'll post it later.
But we'll post it. Oh, we'll have the...
According to this, we've been back for the last 4 minutes.
Oh, well, what do we know?
Well, we're streaming again.
Well, we were goofing off. The internet was fixing itself. Yay.
So we have to go back and say everything again that we said the first time?
people are like, no!
Start over!
It was good.
It was good stuff.
And we would like to praise the United Nations for fixing our internet.
That's right. Exactly. This is what happens when you turn over control, I'm telling you.
It's the internet naming system. So we're talking about kind of finding some balance in the chaos. And, you know, it's funny. We used to make TV shows about chaos. Remember Get Smart?
Yes.
It was always, the forces of chaos were coming. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what. I think the forces of chaos are sort of here a little bit, working on folks and pushing their buttons. So do you see a lot of people who've basically been running their lives, they're just fine, and then they just sort of hit the wall and melted down?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Because I'm meeting a lot of those people. I'm wondering if they're coming to see you.
Yeah, well, we have created a lifestyle in this country that's not healthy for any of us. We talk about standard of living. We have worked hard to improve our standard of living, to acquire more, get a bigger house, whatever it is we do. We're making 2 car payments, a mortgage payment. We're maxed out on our credit cards. So we can't slow down or we're going to get buried. Both parents working. Kids are left home alone. The attachment that we spoke of earlier is not taking place. They're being left on their own, and so people are run, until finally there's just nothing left.
What about all the activities? You know, my kids were little in the 80s. I inherited them when I was very young. And they rode their bikes to school and, you know, played outside and had to come home when the streetlights were on. It was a little bit like when I was a kid.
Sure.
Now, I guess the thing that always freaks me out about the kid thing is because of the child stealers and all these things we have going on, they never get to have any time by themselves.
Right, right. Well, certainly.
Drive them here, drive them there.
Well, not necessarily just that. It's just make their own choices and live with the consequence.
And too many choices available out there.
Right.
You know, a lot of scary things. As a culture, you know, when we talk about politics, we talk about education, we talk about everything in this country that's going to heck in a handbasket. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is I think all of it comes down to a cultural collapse and a breakdown of the family. And it's all going together. It's all moving together. But when we're not intentional in terms of trying to transfer values through the generations, and we get caught up in having too much fun and distracted ourselves. And in fact, it wasn't our generation, it wasn't modeled for us by parents how to transfer those values to us because it was our culture. Mm-hmm. It was in the school system. It was never challenged. So we just kind of had this assumption, well, our kids are going to be fine. I was, you know.
Sure.
I played out until 10 o'clock at night playing kick the can, and life was good. Well, that's very different nowadays, and we have to become far more intentional about communicating our values and right and wrong to our children.
Well, it's
more than just being our kids' friends. That's
yes.
That's a big
and the
part.
Values. Yeah. Actually, the values that we, those of us here in this room, anyway, consider to be normal values, mm-hmm. that's all considered bad now, for the most part. That's.
Yes.
That's all considered narrow-minded and white privilege or whatever the hater term is these days, the hater term of choice.
Well, if you've made a decent life for yourself, then clearly you have no empathy for those who have struggled
that's
in life.
That's true.
And that makes you bad, you know. And, you know, there's a few out there that I suppose have given credence to that accusation. But for the most part, as Americans, we're decent people. We're hardworking people, and you know, one of the things I like about Redding, California, yes, we have a lot of people in trouble in this community, but the millions and millions of dollars that this community gives to the homeless and those who need food is incredible, and I think Redding is to be commended to that for that, and I think that that's true across this country. What people don't want to do is have the government take it away from them, spill half of it, and then give it to the homeless.
Right.
We want to be able to support people. And I think we do have empathy. I think we do care. And we also know that helping people who are making bad choices, if you help them, you're hurting them. And they need to be able to reap the consequences of some of their choices before they can hopefully come around to a place of saying, I do need to get my life turned around.
See, I don't think it's helpful or kind or any of that to hand somebody $5 out of your car window that's sitting at the exit of the post office or the whatever corner. Yeah. I think actually, from my perspective, maybe it's because I've never been there, but we have so many really good programs in our community to help people move through that part.
And get back on their feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just seems to me like self-perpetuating.
And a lot of the people
disaster.
Who don't use those resources are not using them because they got kicked out of it for their behavior.
Or they didn't need it in the first place.
True.
Yeah. I mean, I always wonder about how many of those folks go home. And
But a lot of them, one thing I see is a lot of these folks do have mental problems. They can't get a job. I don't care. You can dress them up, give them a shower, walk them in the front door of a place, and they're not employable.
Right.
You know.
And thank you for bringing that up, Bill. And I did want to mention that. And that is that there are mental illnesses that are genetically passed. They are biochemical in nature. And there are a lot of these folks who wish they could make it and do better with their lives. And I think that you know, in fact, it was Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California.
Oh, yeah.
He shut down a lot of the mental health facilities in the state of California, and that probably never should have happened. I know he's an icon for conservatives, but...
Yeah, sure. But what... And I didn't live here then, and if I did, I don't think I would have been old enough to be part of the decision-making of that, but what was the thought process? Have you ever gone back and looked at that? I have not.
I hadn't been born then, so I have no idea.
Now you can play the song about how we're really young, Bob.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think these folks that are out there that aren't employable, I think you could argue that, well, when they were younger, they made bad choices, and now they're where they are. Well, okay, they made some bad choices. Maybe they've been on drugs for the last 20 years, and they have damaged their psyche to where now they really can't be employed, but that doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
I mean, we still have to do something with them.
Yeah. And we have attempted, you know, through the years, almost kind of like a communal living kind of situation to try to help these people with lower cost housing and stuff. And we've actually gone in and tore those places down now for inner city people because they didn't help. It was kind
of that's kind of being the thing again. Like, I think it's up in Oregon. They're starting these communities again where homeless people can move in, stay for a while, do their thing. As long as they behave, they can live there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be this utopia for homeless. Yeah. It doesn't work.
And so that leaves us with, well, what then do we do?
Yeah, so what is the great answer?
What is the answer? I think all of us – I don't have an answer, by the way, but I think all of us need to
– yeah,
I could write a book and make a lot of money. I think all of us need to be incredibly grateful the fact that we don't have the issues that many of these people have. You know, but by the grace of God, there go I. And it could have been any one of us.
Or my kids, or my brother, or, yeah. Because they're all related to people. I always wonder about that, too, you know. I did meet a guy who was struggling. The IRS actually had attached his retirement wages from the IRS. Mm-hmm. How's that for, like, craziness? He had retired from them. He had no family. Not one person on this earth he was related to ask for help.
Right.
But
right.
most of us have somebody.
Right.
You know?
And we're such a mobile population nowadays that the nuclear families don't stay in the same town, the same neighborhood, and support and encourage one another.
We have Mike from Shasta Lake who has a question or a comment for us.
Well, it's just a comment there.
Fire.
You know, the reason the hospitals were all closed under Reagan, since you're not old enough to remember that, and
I am. Thank you.
Proposition 13 killed the tax rates, and the money dried up.
Oh, okay.
That's the reason why all the hospitals closed.
Yeah, there was no money to run them, and that was the reason they closed them. But
did you just get older again, Bill?
No, what did they think was going to happen to these folks once they turned them out on the street? The families were just going to take over? And
Mike, back when that was all being contemplated and done, what was the pitch?
Yeah, what was the argument
time?
To what to do with them?
There was no argument. It was figured that most of them would end up in jail or be recommitted under another program. And that did not happen.
No. Kind of like,
and so they
like
were
the
just
AB,
left out on the street.
Much like AB 109, we're just going to put them back in the community, and they're going to have a third or fourth chance, and they're going to go straight.
We'll just absorb more criminals, and then we won't notice.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. That's
you're
enlightening.
Rock 13. See, there's always an answer out there.
But again, this all comes back to the family.
Right.
Okay. Because family members were not taking care of those in their family who were ill. And so I guess you could make some argument that they shouldn't have been in those places in the first place if family members were responsible in taking care of people who were ill. When government stepped in and said, we're going to start taking care of these people for you, we all relinquished that responsibility. And we said, oh, that's great. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And so government continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger, taking care of more and more people, and it does not help people.
No. And then, some people obviously are, you know, have enough issues that the family can't take care of them, mm-hmm. like in the house or whatever. I mean, I realize there's always a point for that. Mm-hmm. But when we think the government's going to start to finish, handle it all.
You know, I'd like to make a comment, too, that sounds a little contrary to my typical political positions.
Oh.
Can
it be controversial?
Some of your listeners are not going to agree with me on this, and that's okay.
We're good with that.
but the changes in medicine the last couple of years, I feel, very upset about it, as anybody is. But I have to say this, that one of the changes in the medical system that I think has been very helpful, and that is that people on Medi-Cal can get counseling now.
They couldn't before?
They didn't pay enough, and therapists wouldn't even take their calls. They upped it, and the people who needed help through the years couldn't get help. They just went into the mental health, and they threw pills at them and said, see you in a month when you need your prescription renewed. Right now, in higher ground, counseling is very much involved with people through Partnership Health Plan, which is a provider of Medi-Cal. And these folks are doing well. I am so happy they have these resources to be able to help them. And I'm hoping that part will produce some good fruit for our society.
Well, I don't think that's contrary. I mean, it's nice to know something. Mm-hmm. It wasn't 100% bad. Mm-hmm. You know, that somebody did benefit from the changes that happened, because
the ones who need it the most are the ones who are getting it. And of course, depending upon the counselors, if they're continuing to make choices that are not healthy, and if they're taking advantage of and stuff, depending upon the counselor, we don't let people off the hook. You know, we're here to be a friend. We're here to encourage them. We're here to come alongside of them. And when that attachment, if you would, is established in a counseling relationship, then that's when we begin to stir them in the right directions. That says, you know what, this is hurting you. If you want to help yourself, let's go in a different direction.
But that takes time.
It does take time.
That takes time. And if you don't have the coverage for that and you're on Medi-Cal, then you don't have the money.
Right.
Huh. Well, that's cool to know. We'll take a quick break here. You are listening to We the People Radio, and apparently we are back online. So if you missed the first hour, you know what? We'll have it posted by, 2:15. Yeah, bang your head on the table twice, and we'll hear you. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my give a damn's busted. May the good Lord be with you down every road you roll. And may sunshine and happiness surround you when you're far from home. And may you grow to be proud, dignified and true.
A set of directions, huh?
Yes, excellent.
Doing to others, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we were talking, we always talk in the, you know, during the commercials about all this stuff. We're like, oh, darn, we shouldn't have talked about it then. Let's talk about it again. Okay, you guys are a Christian focus of counseling, or how do you term that?
Well, we see people of all persuasions.
Sure.
We're not exclusively that. But an awful lot of our clientele are Christians, and they seek us out because we are Christians. And ironically enough, Christians are still in need of learning more about the grace of God. And even though we're arrogant and self-righteous and we think we have all of the answers, we don't. And there's a couple of different ways of dealing with shame in my life. One way that I can deal with shame in my life is I can go to somebody who tells me, you're not a bad person. You're a good person. You didn't mean to murder those three people. You know, I'm speaking with hyperbole. But we try to build people's self-esteem by trying to talk them out of perhaps what is legitimate guilt and shame. And that works for a time. It doesn't work all that long. And so then I have a perpetual client, makes me rich. That works. That's good.
Because guilt isn't necessarily in and of itself bad.
No, guilt is a good thing.
Guilt is actually kind of a motivator,
absolutely.
A barometer, I guess.
Well, there is such a thing as false guilt. There is such a thing as false shame, especially to those who have an overly sensitive conscience and other people project their stuff onto them and they don't manage boundaries well and they end up kind of accepting it. I'm a bad person because all of these people around me are telling me and they're the ones that are really kind of off the bubble, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, no two stories are exactly the same. I mean, it's all kinds of different things. But Christian therapy offers something that other therapies do not. And that is that I can own my shame, I can own my guilt, and I can go to a place where it is genuinely forgiven. And I don't have to be in denial about it. I don't have to hide. I don't have to lie about it. I don't have to hang my head in shame. I don't have to not make eye contact with people because there's so much shame in my life. I don't even have to go through this stupid exercise in my mind every morning when I get up trying to convince myself I'm a good person. Actually, the Bible says we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, no, not one. So the guilt and shame is there by design to lead us to the place where the guilt and the shame can be relieved, because all of our guilt and all of our shame was placed on the Son of God, Jesus Christ. He died on the cross, shed his blood for us, and this is what Jesus says to the world. It's on me. I got this one for you. and I love you, and I do forgive you. You are as white as snow. Therefore, do not live with this guilt and shame any longer. But the prerequisite to getting that kind of forgiveness is not to deny my guilt and shame, is to confess my guilt and shame.
And do, and be proactive and do something about it.
Yeah.
And so what okay, so we'll be nasty generalizers here.
Okay.
If we're going to be just nasty generalizers, the bulk of the theory of counseling out there, the part that, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't really fly, you know, doesn't work and doesn't mm-hmm. make long-term, you know, right. really good life changes, right. what's it teaching?
Well,
and of course, we're doing a nasty generalization here. So.
Yes. Okay. So
have at it.
I hope my associates and colleagues in the industry are not listening to me right now.
That's what I mean. I mean, yeah,
answer
like, you know,
the question.
That's everybody else doing out there. No.
Yeah. Well,
there's a pervasive school of thought, though, that's very, yes. very.
Well, I think I just described it in one sense, and that
yeah.
is let's do a blame shift. Let's do blame shifting. Let's not own our stuff. Let's not be responsible about it and do something about it. It's okay to confess I have done wrong, and it's a healthy thing to be able to do instead of, you know, blaming my parents. They did this to me when I was growing up.
I hate
and,
that.
You know, it's we're told to honor our parents and have our parents blown it, you know, varying different degrees of they did a pretty good job to they were miserable at it. But if I want to blame my problems and my choices on something that my parents did and maybe under the circumstances was the very best they could do, and they're not geniuses maybe, and they if they had known, they would have done differently. Any number of different things that I don't think as a whole, even if parents did a terrible job and you did come away from those things injured, it doesn't necessarily heal you by trying to blame somebody else for it.
I've kind of always hated the blame the parents thing. It yeah. was my mom's fault. It was my dad's fault.
Right.
And hey, maybe they did some stuff that wasn't right, but at some point you need to stand up and,
well, it, and it's,
do something different.
Well, we do, but it's not easy. You know?
No. Don't. Get me wrong, I'm not saying it's easy as saying that.
And even many of us in the conservative circles, we have this idea of just telling people to stop it.
You know, and stop it.
Just stop it. In fact, if you or your listeners want to, and I highly recommend it, go to YouTube and type in a search for Stop It, Bob Newhart. And it's a great, great video of him as a psychiatrist dealing with a woman that he gives direction to by saying, stop it. And, of course, you know Bob Newhart. He does a great job.
Yeah.
So you really have to see it.
Yeah.
So go to YouTube, Stop It, Bob Newhart, and enjoy.
I will link that on the page.
Oh, cool. It's been around for a few years. I think it was a Saturday Night Live clip is what it was.
Oh, probably.
Not a program I watch, but I sure saw that clip. And
well,
I
back in the day, it.
It
was funny. I don't know what they're doing now. But.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, we, as therapists, want to make people feel better. That's our job. And sometimes it has to get worse before it gets better. Now, depending upon someone's illness, it may be that our goal is not to make you feel better. Our goal is to keep you alive. You know, every situation is different, and people are broken in so many ways. And, you know, we may even have some listeners right now who have thought from time to time, I'm just not sure my life is worth it. Mm-hmm. Not my wife. I hope she's not listening.
Oops, Freudian slip.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah.
Do counselors make Freudian slips?
Yes, they do. Yeah. I'm going to call my counselor as soon as I get out of here.
Classic.
So
we'll put that little clip on here on a little short loop.
Yeah. Can we edit this? Is this live?
Live radio is so great.
Yeah, okay.
Damn it, Bob, hit the button.
We'll have to edit the podcast.
Exactly.
But that was incredibly rude. The timing was horrible because I'm talking to people who may be on the brink of saying, I don't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
And so forgive me, those of you who may be listening, because I know you hurt. Let me also say this. I've been there. I have lost a child to suicide 20 years ago. I have been in a psychiatric ward and lived there for a time. It took me 10, 15 years to work through those things. Many of you have a family member. Maybe you yourself have considered taking your own life. you know, if you don't have money and if you don't have insurance, just call me anyway. And I'll sit down and talk with you and see if we can't get you plugged into some resources that maybe you can get some help. But it's very serious. And everybody's life is worth living. Everybody's life is a gift from God. And it may be that you're going through misery and you have been for a very, very, very long time. And I don't know that we have the resources to be able to give you the resources to be able to make life better for you. I just want you to live in a better place within your own heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can.
Yeah, that's actually where it starts.
You can have peace and you can be noble in character and live under a bridge. I just mm-hmm. believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people would say, well, you're not offering them much hope. Well, we're offering them a better understanding of the value and the worth of life being created in the image of God, that every soul matters. And if you're hurting out there today, please get some help. In fact, you can call the suicide helpline. It's 225-2525. If that's not the right answer, then I've just destroyed even more hope in your life. I think it is 225-2525.
It's our bad influence because we resort to humor on everything. And, you know, I was going to ask you about that.
I think I just gave the wrong number.
I think you just called the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom. We'll look that up. How about that?
It's 225-5252.
There you go.
Yeah.
Say it again.
It's 225-5252.
Oh, 5252.
Or 225-5200. I think either one of those will get you into mental health.
Nice.
Please seek help.
And do we have to take a break or no? I'm so bad at that. It seems like we just have so many breaks. What's going on there? We come back, I want to talk about humor and coping.
Okay.
And how many of us cope with humor?
Very good.
If that's good or bad.
How many people cope with our humor?
Let's evaluate that. We'll be right back. You're listening to
We're assuming somebody's still listening.
Theme song. Little Higher Ground Counseling theme song. Okay, so what about humor? I know in our family, that's our coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Except you use humor until somebody's crying.
Well, and then there was that.
Yeah. Well, humor can be good and bad.
Right. Okay? And I guess that's where I was kind of
because headed. Sometimes we use humor to deflect a serious conversation about something we're going through. It's a way of being in denial sometimes. But on the other hand, I also think that if we can't learn to laugh at ourselves, life can get pretty dry, pretty cold. So I think God gave us this wonderful capacity to be able to laugh. He also gave us this wonderful capacity to cry. And they both serve a really, really good purpose. But sometimes when people use humor to try to defend against somebody trying to get through their defenses, trying to help, trying to reach, or even within ourselves, we don't really want to go to a place that's a little bit painful. That's just kind of delaying a healing. It can be a form of stuffing. And I think we all do it, you know. But humor's great. Use it. It's fun. I love to use humor in the counseling room. But let's make sure it doesn't mean that we're using it as an excuse to not go deeper and find out what's really troubling us at the core and find some healing in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not ignoring the important stuff. But
right. But
I do think sometimes people don't, I mean.
How hard is it, I mean, to really, I mean, somebody comes in, they've obviously got issues because they're coming to see you. Is it, how often is it really what they want to talk about and there's something mm-hmm. much bigger down there that they're, you've got to really dig to find?
You know, it just depends on the client. It depends on their expectations. We don't take people where they don't want to go. Now, we may suggest, you know, I think there may be something here that we could touch on. But I do think we have to be very careful with that. I think sometimes therapists can
create an issue.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're considered the professionals. We have somebody who's hurting a little bit, and the power of suggestion is very, very mm-hmm. powerful for hurting people.
Sure, they're looking for an answer.
Right, and so we can end up talking them into some diagnosis that we think this is what's going on there, and I think that's, I mean, that's detrimental to the
sure.
profession as well as to the individuals that we're trying to help.
So you've never really run into anybody that was abducted by aliens? And that is the source of...
Well, I won't say never, you know, because...
Never say never.
People have genetic and biochemical kinds of issues. Medications do help them, which
Yeah,
is,
I was going to ask you about that. What about the medication thing?
Some people just simply have to have it. And the people who need it the most are usually those who don't take it as often as they should. Because the medications do have side effects that aren't always as pleasant. They're certainly much better now than they used to be. Sometimes you have to work with a doctor to find the one that is best for you. What studies have shown is that medication alone does some good. Talk therapy alone does some good. But when you put the both together, that's when you have the best results with your clients, that you have a little medication that kind of slows the mind down a little bit, helps you to think straight a little bit, and then while you're in that state, somebody's actually coaching you and helping you to get some of that thinking mm-hmm. straightened out so that after a time you've changed your neural pathways in your brain, that you're no longer falling into the same ruts that you've always been in terms of your thinking, and you begin to think differently. And it does change the chemistry of the brain, by the way. We now know that if I can think different thoughts long enough with somebody coaching me to do that, that they become my new neural pathways of default, and I'll start falling into those positive ways quickly.
And then they can walk back from – like I always wonder, you know, if there's a crisis, say, for instance, someone dies or there's – I don't know, divorce, something mm-hmm. like that. And they put people on these medications. We worked with a guy. I guess I might as well just tell you what I'm thinking. We worked with a guy who was going through a divorce. He made it as painful as possible because it took forever. Didn't really just do it,
right.
do what he needed to do.
Right.
And so they put him on, I don't know.
Probably an antidepressant.
Yeah, some kind of Prozac. I think it was Prozac back mm-hmm. then. I don't know if they even use that, but... They put him on that, and then it's like everything was fine.
Mm.
Everything's fine. I'm not sad. I'm not happy. I'm not anything. I'm just white noise. And
right.
I thought, well, how is that helpful? Does it still do that to people?
To some people, it may be that he had too high of a dose. But during that stage, when he was saying, I'm fine, is when he needed somebody to come along, mentor him, and say, okay, let's think about this. Let's not just stuff it. Let's not just push it aside, especially men, frankly. We stuff more than women do. And I think some of that's culture, but I also think some of that is kind of genetically put in us, you know.
Is the medication I didn't mean to interrupt, but is the medication a permanent thing? Once they put them on, I mean, you hear that people get on this stuff and then they never get off. Is that true? Or once
No.
you get your issues resolved, do they No. wean you off of that stuff and
Yes.
then you're okay?
I mean, that's providing you're not schizophrenic or something. I mean, like
Yeah.
it's
if
not
you
a...
have a biochemical genetic issue, you're going to be on meds the rest of your life
Right.
or you're going to be under the bridge talking to
Right.
somebody who's not
bushes.
There. You
Yeah.
know? And that's very, very tragic disease, and we should not make fun of that.
No,
it's
no,
a
no.
horrible thing.
It's but brutal for the family.
It is brutal. Bill, to answer your question, the antidepressants, for the most part, are not addictive. When you have taken them for 6 months to a year, and by the way, if you're going to take them, you should take them at least for 6 months to a year. If you take them for a couple, 3 months, and you start to feel better, number one, that's kind of unusual. It takes a long time. But But number two, if you do start to feel better and you go off of them too soon, then you could find yourself back into a dark place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, take them until you feel good and then take them 6 months more. Talk to your doctor and then maybe you can titrate down a little bit. Now, depending upon the depth of one's darkness or depression or despair, some people are just frankly prone. I think there is a predisposition in some people. Some of us are melancholies. We struggle with that anyway, even outside of circumstances.
Oh, sure. Everybody's personality is different, yeah.
And so those of us who are melancholy, we struggle a little bit more. Now, if I am prone to very, very deep depressions, if I'm younger and I'm gone through my first episode and the medications helped and they got me out of it, that's great. If I then relapse a year or two, 5, 10 years later, and I go into a second very, very deep depression, understanding we're not talking about being in a bad mood. When we're in depression, we're in a very dark place. And one of the symptoms of depression is that I cannot think clearly enough in order to get myself out of it. So if you tell me to stop it, it does absolutely no good whatsoever.
Right.
And if you throw a Bible verse at me, it makes it worse. Because you're moralizing now on my depression, right? And so it's a very delicate walk to help people come out of that. But it may be that my second episode of depression is going to go even deeper and longer. So I'm going to be on the meds longer. If I go into a third very, very deep depression, there's a good likelihood I'm going to take meds the rest of my life to protect myself from that darkness and that despair. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you're a diabetic, you're not going to take yourself off insulin because you don't think you want to do that anymore.
Right.
If you need it, you need it. And there shouldn't be any moralizing for that at all.
I hear a lot of people that are on medication because obviously they are messed up, but then you hear...
That's a clinical term.
Yes. But then you hear, he's off his meds. And mm-hmm. Why do they do that? Why do they stop taking them?
Because of the side effects.
And what are those?
Side effects are, for example, if you have somebody that has a lot of highs and lows and highs and lows, okay, they don't feel good when they're in the lows, but they feel on top of the world during the highs. What medications do, for example, not antidepressants, but mood stabilizers, is they bring up the lows, but they also bring down the highs.
Mm.
They live in the middle instead of at the peaks
and
in the valleys.
When they're in the middle, they miss the highs.
Yep.
When, for example, if somebody is having a manic episode and you see them and you know them, you actually think they're on speed. You will say, this guy just took a hit of meth or something. He's not sleeping. He doesn't need to sleep. He's going to be the president of the United States and he can conquer the world if anybody would just listen to him. And he'll start 20 different projects and not finish any of them, and you'll say, this guy's messed up. No, he has a biochemical issue going on in his brain. But for them, it's euphoric. It's fantastic.
Sure, they're
sure,
really
they
creative.
Feel good.
We have a lot of artists
they're cured.
People who are super, super creative, and that's when they get all their great ideas.
Yeah, and this happens across the board, across all cultures and nationalities around the world. 1% of the people in the world, no matter where you come from, are schizophrenic. It's just proven.
Really?
Yes. But if you think about bipolar, which we struggle with a lot nowadays, is that people who are on bipolar medications, they'll go on them when they're in a depression because they feel miserable. But when they start to come out of it, they want to keep going up to the high. So when they get normal, they go off of it and then they experience the high. So, you know, folks with these kinds of diseases, it's just known that you're going to expect that they're going to go off of their medications. And it's really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But they're always making improvements
on these.
Yeah,
that's a hard little ride there. Is that where people start to I see this a lot with people who are being cut off of, like, pain medications. Mm-hmm. They start self-medicating, and then pretty soon we're into, you know, heroin and different things like that they think they can manage.
Right.
Do medications in your type of profession have that as well? Things that transition over into the street drugs, basically?
No, not really.
Do they do that, though? Same kind of thing?
Well, people will do it to self-medicate no matter what. And if they have
alcohol or whatever.
Sure. I mean, alcohol is a great anxiolytic. It takes people's anxiety away, you know, but of course it'll kill you, you know. So, but people can be on medications. Maybe they do okay and then they get off of it. That doesn't mean that they're not going to go back and use other drugs or alcohol again. But it's not the medications that they were taking that's having them start taking other drugs, illicit drugs, and so forth.
Interesting.
A lot of tests prove that.
Yeah, because it's all over the place.
Chances are, if somebody is using a lot of illegal street drugs and stuff, they're probably, maybe even beyond their own knowledge, they're already medicating something going on in them, and it makes them feel better without realizing I have a mental health issue.
Hmm.
So just getting them off of that without fixing the problem, back to where we started, got to fix the whole thing.
80% of people who are addicted are dual diagnosed. In other words, they have a substance abuse issue. 80% of them also have a mental health issue.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Makes a lot of sense. We are not going to take a break. We are going to take a break. Give me the nod, Bob.
Take your pill.
Exactly. Let me know. Am I going up or down?
Pay no attention to the hand.
Yeah, I was like, I'm getting mixed signals here. We're going to take a really quick break.
I had a cramp in my hand.
Somebody pop Bob on the back of the head. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll have the show up for you commercial-free here this afternoon so you can hear the whole thing if you were unfortunately cut off at the first hour.
Country music singers have always been a real close family. But lately, some of my kinfolk have disowned a few others than me. I guess it's because I kind of changed my direction. Lord, I guess I went and broke their family tradition.
I think that I might die if I miss anything at all. Text me, send an email, link me up, give me a call. I'm ADD on AOL and trying to read the writing on the wall. Everybody's on the phone, so connected and all alone. From the pizza boy to socialite, we all salute the satellite. Won't you text me with your master plan? You're loud and clear, but I don't understand. I'm a digital explorer in analog roam, and everybody's on the phone.
And isn't that the truth of it?
Sorry, no kidding.
Okay, so you've got this friend, right, that probably ought to talk to somebody.
I know a guy
mm-hmm. you know, who needs a professional. Mm-hmm. And maybe that person obviously has not figured it out because they're not doing anything about it, or you've got a teenage mm-hmm. kid, or I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're not looking for help.
Right.
How do we help them get to you?
Are you talking about me?
Well, you know.
Okay.
I thought you guys were going fishing later.
it's difficult. Number one, I would say, for those who might be listening, wondering if they themselves have issues, I would suggest look for patterns in your life. Do you have repeating patterns that end up bringing you pain every time you go through them? It may be that you would even want to ask somebody, can you help me identify the patterns I have in my life? Usually it's relationship-oriented. The bottom line is, or one of the bottom lines is that if we're going to be healthy individuals, we have to be in healthy relationships. And so many people just go from unhealthy to unhealthy to unhealthy relationships.
Or they go back to the same unhealthy one over and over and over.
Yeah, and it's because it's meeting a relational need, but they don't have enough discernment or willpower to try to say, or self-image enough to know that I deserve somebody better than this.
You see that a lot.
A lot, yes.
You really do.
So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because I'm a low life, I'm never going to get anybody, so I might as well choose another low life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very dark place. It's hard. If you have a friend who is struggling and you want to be able to help them, number one, be incredibly careful. Because whatever you say, if they're dealing with depression and despair, they're in a dark place, that your words can be received as very condemning, even if they're words that you're trying to help them. a lot of times the best things that you can do is simply ask appropriate questions. Appropriate questions like, how you doing? And then shut up and listen. You know, there's a story in the Bible, it's the book of Job. And Job lost everything, he had every right to be in despair. And then his friends showed up and they just sat there with him and they didn't say a word. And when they didn't say a word, they were doing a great work for Job. But as soon as they opened their mouth, there was the fight was on, the defenses came up, if you're familiar with that story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to be careful that we don't cause people's defenses to come up and have them reject us in the relationship when, in fact, we may be the only connection that they have to good health. Do it in the form of questions. How can I help? Is there other resources?
Do people ever come to see you to figure out how to help somebody else come to see you?
Yes, especially their adult children.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense, especially if you didn't know how to do it.
Right.
You know, do they ever come with?
Sometimes.
Seems like that would be useful.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We do a lot of family work. You know, folks will come in and see me individually.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the course of our counseling, we understand there's issues in the home that are kind of exacerbating their individual issues. And so we have family meetings. Let's bring them all in here. Let's lay it on the table. This is kind of what's going on.
Yeah, I can see where this isn't like a one-visit thing. We're going to identify a problem, and then we're going to work on it.
This isn't a trip to the auto body shop.
Right. And, you know,
bang out the dents. And
people need to understand that, you know, if you've got some significant issues, you need to be going to therapy for an extended period of time.
Right.
And I know it's expensive, but, you know, what did you pay for your car?
Right.
Exactly.
And what's more important?
And you might as well go find out.
Yes.
So you're on the north side of 2400 Washington Plaza.
Yes.
Phone number?
941-9003.
Cool. We've been chatting with Guy Asherman, and if you would like to find out more about him, you can find it on our website, wethepeopleradio.us, or directly to their site, hgcounseling.com. Hope you had fun today. Had a nice little break from politics.
Thanks, Guy.
You're welcome. Take a break from politics, too. You'll feel better because the election's coming, whether you like it or not.
If you want to feel
better,
don't watch the election.
Don't watch it.
Yeah. Turn it off now.
But do vote.
Vote.
Yeah.